Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. Good evening. Welcome to our show, All About Service Dogs, hosted by yours truly, Doc Vinsel. Tonight, we'll be featuring Nikki Leonard, and she will be talking to us about her experiences with her service dog and transitioning between jobs, careers, if you will, with a service dog, because there's a change that happens. So, Nikki, greet the people. We hear your dog greeting the people. You greet the people as well.
Yes, I'm Nikki, and I have a service dog. Her name is Ebony. And I have had her for a little over a year, maybe close to a year and a half. July of 2014 is when I got her. And I'm actually a veterinary technician by trade with multiple specialties, as well as an accredited dog trainer. So it's been a little bit of a change with my getting a service dog and being more disabled than I was and having to switch careers. I actually went without work for a few months in June, and I've just started back up at Sears now. Huge difference for me.
Okay, very well. So, you, prior to the onset or the increasing debility of your disability, worked as a vet tech.
Correct.
And was it then that you were certified as a trainer, or after then?
It was after. August of 2014 is whenever I became an accredited dog trainer, which was right when everything started to get kind of more complicated for me, and I started having trouble in my career as a vet tech, which I was new to the career. I had just freshly graduated as a veterinary technician and had a job in a large-scale clinic at the time, and it was a lot of stress on me. I have post-traumatic stress disorder as well as generalized anxiety and social anxiety disorder. So it was a bit more stressed than I was expecting it to be, especially in a very large clinic setting. I worked there from May, right after I graduated, up until August. And I had also gotten my certificate as an accredited dog trainer at that time as well. And that's when I left that current clinic, and I got Ebony in July, right there in the middle. So having Ebony wasn't necessarily a huge thing, being at a clinic. I mean, it was, but we were allowed to bring pets. I have an ESA, emotional support animal, who is a cat, and I had him there because it's a vet clinic. So I was allowed to bring him. So it was a big change to go from a vet clinic setting to a setting where animals aren't just allowed to come in, and you have to take that into account and be prepared for the laws and looking at Title III, which is completely different than the ADA Title II of public access.
Okay, great. What I wanted to do before I got deep into just bouncing questions off of you was I wanted to give you a chance to tell us a story for a little bit. Tell us your story. Tell us what you think maybe we need to hear, and something that can maybe help other service dog handlers that may be listening tonight.
Okay. Well, I will start by kind of telling as short as possible kind of my story and how I came to become disabled and increasingly disabled. I've explained it somewhat, but I know I kind of jumped in the middle of it there. And then how I came to decide to get a service dog and become a service dog team. I have had generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety disorder for most of my life. I come from a broken home, so I have some issues from that. My mother has a lot of the same anxiety disorders as me, as well as some of my other family as well. So it kind of is hereditary. And my mom was a single mom raising me, as well as my grandma raising me while my mother went to work. So I had a lot of bouncing back and forth. I've been told that has somewhat contributed to some of the problems I have. At the age of 16, I began to see someone, a guy, seriously, one of the only serious relationships other than my marriage that I've ever been in. And I was with him for almost 5 years, and he was very abusive to me. So I developed PTSD from that, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I've been told by many psychiatrists that that is not the only thing that contributed to me developing PTSD. It's actually a multiple events kind of thing for me. It's just that kind of set me over the edge, is being in that situation and being pretty much brainwashed for almost 5 years with someone believing that that's all I deserved. I have tried to get past that, of course. I am in a much better relationship now. But leaving that situation and moving forward, I found that my disabilities and my having PTSD has become much more disabling for me than I originally thought it might. I have seen many counselors and many psychiatrists. I have bounced around a lot with doctors and medications, and my family and myself, we're all very big on not taking medications if we don't have to. But of course, in this case, I am on some. I have to be on a few. It's been a tough road. I had one doctor who mentioned to me that a service dog might be a good idea to try. At first, I was very skeptical. Yes, I'm very much an animal lover, obviously, as a veterinary technician by trade, and I've grown up with animals. I've just always really loved animals. But I'm actually not the biggest dog person. I love dogs, don't get me wrong, but I'm not a dog person. Like, I didn't see myself getting a service dog and that being something I could do, and I was also a bit skeptical of the idea at the time. That being said, I went about a month thinking that over, deciding what I wanted to do, and I decided to try owner training. I had read up on some books that I had purchased and looked at, and kind of looked at the difference with programs and waiting lists and how the expense is different, and owner training, and with me being fresh out of school, being a dog trainer, and a veterinary technician, I have the knowledge to train on my own. So I thought to myself, you know, if I decide to do this, I would go the owner-trainer route. That would make sense for me. And then if I needed help from a more seasoned trainer, I do have options in the area. I decided to go to a shelter to look at a dog, which I know is somewhat a controversial subject. Looking back on it, I would say you have to look at that situation going in. A shelter dog won't always fit for a service dog. It's a much harder situation than getting a puppy, because service dogs have to meet much higher standards than a pet or, you know, any other type of dog. But with Ebony, it did work out well. What I did do is I went into the shelter and explained my situation. I asked them if I could have a one-week trial with Ebony as a foster dog. When I first went in there, my biggest thing was I wanted a dog that obviously fit the bill, but was young enough, but I wanted a dog that had been forgotten, had been set aside. I felt I would bond with a dog who, in a way, had been through similar experiences as myself. Of course, I didn't want a traumatized dog, but I wanted a dog that I felt nobody else wanted you, so I'm going to take you. I'm going to be that person that's going to take you. It's funny. They had the wrong dog in the kennel that they showed me. The first dog I seen was a complete train wreck. And I said, oh, okay, I'll try it out, but I didn't really care for that dog. I get in the office to fill out the paperwork, and they say that Ebony is a girl, and the dog I had been looking at was a boy. So I said, the dog I just looked at is a boy. So they showed me Ebony, and it was like a dream come true. She's amazing. She was almost 2 years old. She had grown up there. She was born there. So she hadn't had a life before that that was traumatizing. And this particular shelter was a very calm shelter with lots of volunteers. So she had lots of socialization. She was a really good dog. And I thought, well, I'm so glad that you guys noticed this, because this dog will actually work out better. So I decided to take her home. It was a rough few days. Again, I'm not necessarily a dog person. And I didn't think it was going to work at first. She was hyper, and she wanted to play, and she was stubborn. But by the end of that week, I had a best friend. And although it's been a hard road for us, and she's stubborn, so we had a lot of training challenges in the beginning, she has become one of the most amazing dogs I have ever seen. And she will do anything for me. I love her very much. And that's saying something for me, for those who do know me. I know that even my mother is surprised by Ebony. She was also very skeptical of a service dog and what they can do for people. It's not that she didn't believe it. I don't think that's what it was. But she didn't realize just what they could do for somebody until she saw the change that Ebony brought out in me. So it's been a pretty amazing road this past year and a half.
Okay, I guess it's my turn now to...
Yeah, sorry, I'm kind of long-winded.
That's okay. That's what we wanted you there for. And, got a few questions for you on your story, and let you dig a little deeper into what you said.
Okay.
I was going to ask you about the decision to own or train, but you pretty much took care of that. And, you know, the fact that you are a trainer and, you know, a trained trainer,
mm-hmm.
and you have other trainers around you that you can go to for help. I thought that was very important that you would say that, especially to people that are choosing to own or train for whatever reason. But here we have a person who went to school for training, who is in the animal world, who knows animals, and you still took the time to say, you know what, if I need help training, who's going to help me? And so that's very important, and people need to hear that. What I want to ask you is, you talked about a couple things. One of them was the shelter dog, that you wanted to go with the shelter dog. And I hear you pretty much to say, I want to give a dog something that I want people to give me, which is basically a second chance on life. You know, you felt thrown away. You felt like nobody wanted you. And you wanted the dog to know, you know what? Somebody can love you. Somebody can appreciate you. Somebody does want you. And you wanted to give that to a dog pretty much because you want somebody to give that to you. And you said,
yeah.
You know, I went with a shelter dog, and I'm looking at a week trial. Now, I always tell people if they do go with a service dog, a shelter dog, you do want to ask them for a trial period of the time. Now, you said a week, and then you said, you know, it didn't look good right up front. And then as it progressed, it got to be better. My question to you is this. Do you think a week trial is really enough time to assess a dog as far as can this dog do what you want it to do or what you need it to do to be your service dog?
Looking back on it now, I don't. Learning more as I've went along, I would say that you would want more, at least a month, which with shelters is not always an option. Sometimes you can ask them to allow you to foster the dog, and that gives you time to see how the dog is going to work out. And then you have more time. You can work with that dog and decide if you want to adopt the dog. But overall, you have to be very careful when choosing a shelter dog. Although, yes, that is what I wanted. You're dead on. I can see now how it can be a bad choice. I've seen others who struggle with going the shelter route. I'm not completely saying it's completely out, because it's not. But there is a lot that goes into it if you're going to go that route. It's a huge difference from getting a puppy and socializing that puppy and knowing that puppy's lineage and what it's been through and its background and socialization. And even then, you have your trials and your errors and your issues. And sometimes those dogs don't work out either, because it is very hard to find that perfect fit for a service dog, because they have to meet such higher standards than a pet.
Okay, so say I'm a person and I've decided for whatever reason I'm going with the owner training and I am going with the shelter dog. Now, what are some things you would suggest that they look for when picking and choosing their shelter dog?
Okay, you're going to want a dog that is not fearful. To start with, when you're going there and looking and making that decision, you need to know that what you want for a trial period, which I would suggest at least 30 days, or thinking about fostering that dog ahead of time. You want to know that going in. You want to be prepared that you may not find the dog you're looking for as well. you want a dog that's not going to be overly fearful. Honestly, you don't want them to be fearful at all, but puppies do go through fear stages, and shelters do have puppies at times. But I would say you want to look for a confident dog, but not an overly confident dog. Not a dog that wants to run you down, run you over, be completely in control. You want to try to find a calm, focused dog that you can have its attention just by going over to it, but not to the point that it's just overly excited just because it wants out of that, you know, situation, that kennel, that cage. More, it's focused on you. It wants to get to know you. It's confident. It's not fearful. It will stand there or sit there, you know, and be prepared, whether it's wagging its tail or, you know, sitting there calmly. You want kind of that balance there. You don't want an overly excited, rambunctious dog necessarily, but you don't want one that's over there huddled in the corner either. And of course, you don't want a dog that's aggressive in any way, form, or fashion. If that dog has a bite record, you need to move on to the next dog, even if that dog looks happy and content when you're seeing that dog. You want to avoid those situations completely.
Okay, you have just given me a wonderful segue into my next question. You had mentioned that Ebony looked like she was not working out there at the beginning, but then all of a sudden you stuck with it, and all of a sudden she looked like, oh my goodness, and now you're at the point, you know what, I can't do without this. Things that you would look for when deciding to either retire a working service dog or to wash out a service dog in training?
What things would I look for? I'm sorry, it had cut out just in the middle of your question. Is that what you would ask?
What things would you look for when deciding to either wash out a dog or to retire a service dog?
You want to look at, if you have a dog that is, I actually had a situation with that, so I can definitely relate and kind of explain. If you have a dog that is, seems bored with its job and doesn't, and no longer wants to do tasks, or appears to be in some form of pain, or is acting out, that is something you need to look at. If a dog at any point shows aggression or is overly fearful, that is something you need to look at. If it's pain related, you want to look into, you know, a vet, look into x-rays, look into, is this something that is my dog sick? Is my dog hurt? Is this something that is I can fix and we can be happy as a team again? Or is it time to retire and move forward? And sometimes with them being bored, is it we need to mix it up a little, you know, throw something in there, some extra play time, a new task, something different, change up the routine a little bit. And if that dog is not responding to that, it may be time to retire or to wash that dog and move forward with a possibility of a new prospect or going on without a service dog.
Okay, now let's speed up and fast forward, I guess, a little bit. And now you're about a year in with this dog,
mm-hmm.
and this being your first service dog, what can you tell me about the benefits of this dog for you and some positive changes that's been made in your environment because of the dog?
Before I had a service dog, I was beginning to really shut down emotionally, mentally speaking. I was getting to a point that I didn't even want to get out of bed, and I was at the time also on medication. So it was not just because I refused to take any kind of forward motion to fix the problem. We had tried a lot of different things. I have had and still do have insomnia mixed with days where I am so tired all I do is sleep. I have night terrors, I have hallucinations, I have dissociation, all from the anxiety, the post-traumatic stress disorder. With the dog, I have task-trained her in things such as blocking and covering to put space between me and others, which has helped me immensely when I'm alone in places, as I have been assaulted before. And I also do fear my ex showing up out of nowhere. So when I'm in a big area like Walmart or crowded area, she is able to put a barrier between me and another person. Generally, I have her do cover behind me and watch my back. So I feel that there is security there because she will let me know if somebody comes up close by pushing against my legs, or she at times will have a very low, almost not at all audible huff sound that she makes. Generally, that is in a situation where I'm not in a store, but more in a very secluded area like a park. But she does have that. I have task trained that as well. I also have deep pressure therapy, which is very big for me, as I do have some physical pain as well. And also, when I am overly anxious, I will have her lay across my abdomen or my legs or my knees, which is a pressure point for, and I have her do that for comfort and to calm me down, to bring me down from the anxious moment. With deep pressure therapy, it's actually been used in psych patients over the years without service dogs, using the weight and heat of heated padded blankets. It is very well proven method, and it has worked really well for me. I also have clear the room for her, so she can clear a room before me, before I go into an empty room such as my house. So that has helped me be able to leave without fear that someone will be waiting for me when I return to attack me or steal me and take me back into the situation I was in before. This has really helped me be able to get back out and not be afraid to wake up in the morning. She'll also wake me up from nightmares. That took a very long time to train. It isn't exactly a simple thing to train. It's with nightmares, I mean the kind where I am screaming in my sleep or making noise. That will, when she hears that, she will come and pull me awake. She will also help me to wake up in the morning when I don't want to get out of bed by either grabbing a pant leg or pulling off the blanket. Those are tasks that were a bit harder for me to train for her, but they have come in very handy for me on my particularly rough days. She is task trained in many, many things. Those are just some that have really helped me be able to be in public and to continue working and try to, you know, be a normal, functional human being and not stay at home locked away. I live in a 400 population town, so if I really wanted to lock myself away, it would be very easy to do, and it was getting very easy to do. So she has really helped me come out of my shell. She also, one thing my psychiatrist really wanted from her that is kind of surprising to some people is he knew and explained to me, and I also done research, that with service dogs, you have to keep in mind that you have to talk to people because people will ask you questions and people will approach you. He wanted that for me, to help bring me out of my shell. Although some days it's very trying, he wanted that because he knew that would force me to make relationships and form bonds and talk to people and not just bottle myself up and, you know, walk with my head down and hurry up, run in and out of somewhere and just close myself off completely, which I was really beginning to do more and more. And Ebony has really helped with that in the fact that she is a service, just being a service dog in general because of the social aspect of that, that you get asked questions and you do educate. And it has really helped me come out of my shell to have something to tell people about. Again, sometimes it can be rough, hard, and sometimes the questions are a little too personal. But it's really helped me to be more social overall.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to do something that might be a little tough, but I'm just going to ask it because that's my job to do it. I'm going to ask you to key in on some very specific things and say I'm a person, maybe a friend, or maybe somebody in one of your groups, online groups, and we're going to talk about some of your Facebook groups in a minute. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I don't know whether or not I should get a service dog or not. I don't know if it would benefit me. I don't know. You know, maybe I need to be sold on the fact. It's like when you were told the first time, you didn't go right out and say, okay, service dog. You know, it took some things.
Yes.
Take a minute and convince me on the benefit of a service dog. Now, I said a minute, which is generally about 60 seconds, so keep that in mind and hit them points kind of sharp. How's that dog going to benefit me? Why should I invest the time, the money, the energy in a dog? What's it going to do for me?
Okay. Well, being that I was skeptical in the beginning myself, as was my own mother, who might be listening. let me think for a second about how I want to say this to you.
Just say it. We'll clean it up later on.
Yeah. Okay, so when getting a service dog, you're right, a service dog is not for everyone. That being said, there is the aspect of bringing in the social part of it. If you're someone who has trouble being social, but you feel you want to push yourself to be more social, having a service dog is going to help with that. And that's before moving forward with actual task work. Just having a task-trained service dog and educating yourself on that and being able to explain that to the public can really help bring you out of your shell and really help you socially if you have trouble in that area. As far as helping someone who doesn't want to leave their house, it can take some time, and we're all individuals, but task training your dog to help you in ways such as keeping a barrier between you and those that you are fearful of, such as strangers and in large stores, or just going for a walk, can really help to make it a little bit easier to go out. It can still be hard in the beginning, but you will find more and more that while it is hard, you begin to enjoy that and feel a sense of independence finally in yourself again that you may not have felt in a long time. if it's for medical alert, it can really change your life. I do also have hypoglycemia, and she will alert to low blood sugar, which is what hypoglycemia is for those who don't know. And for that, I can pass out if I don't take care of that. If I allow my blood sugar to drop too far, I can pass out and to have, it's kind of like a seizure. It's not a seizure, but it is similar as far as the activity of the leg jittering and the twitching and blacking out and confusion. It can be very helpful to have a dog that can alert to that ahead of time and guide you to a location that is safe to sit down and take out your sugar tablet or your medication if you're going to have a seizure, get you to a spot where you're not going to fall down. There's so many different things out there as far as what service dogs can do and with medical response and medical alert to keep you safe. I've seen dogs that will, in a safe manner, because you don't want a dog that is protective in case an EMT needs to get to you, but I have seen dogs that will, service dogs that will circle just to keep a barrier around you and sit down and just kind of keep an eye on you, kind of keep people from accidentally stepping on you or just kind of keeping you out of the way. I've seen service dogs that can, and this is mainly with research and talking to people with program dogs, but I have seen people with service dogs who will take them to a very secluded spot where they can sit on a chair or sit in the corner of a room out of the way. I've seen them where they can even get a bottle of water for those that have passed out and help them. I've seen them where they are task trained to be off leash, which if they are, it is to mitigate that disability, is okay. It must be in order to mitigate that disability. But I have seen them that are trained in that fashion go and alert somebody that you have passed out or that you are in danger. I've seen many different, seen and heard and researched many different types. I try to help those who want to take that route by helping educate them and helping them to train their dogs. I like to train or assist. I feel that service dogs make a huge difference in the disabled community, whether it be to pull a wheelchair, to lick your face when you're down on your knees, scream, crying because you are having an extreme panic attack, you know, pawing you, changing your focus, getting you focused on them instead of what's making you so upset, you know, alerting to a medical issue, finding somebody to help you, keeping you out of the way and safe, getting your medication for you, helping you remember things. So many things that service dogs can do for people with disabilities. It's a very beautiful thing. And I don't know if I've convinced you, but...
Well, I don't either. We'll just see what the people say that heard it and see if anybody says, hey, you know what? I was on the fence about a service dog, but that lady you had on Wednesday night, well, she helped me to make the decision to go ahead. So we'll just see. Now, I am being aware of my clock and aware of your time, and I wanted to give you a chance to touch on this subject, struggles that you might have or you might be seeing, changing your career, changing your job focus, finding a new job, finding a new career with a service dog.
Yes, that has been probably the biggest hurdle that there is. I originally tried to stay in my field but go down to a part-time position in a different clinic that was smaller. That worked a little bit. It was just a weekend job, and I began a full-time job at a call center. And you would think that would be the perfect job for someone with a service dog because of the atmosphere, which at the time I was still learning the different rules and laws and how it worked and the difference between Title II and Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act and how they differ. So I took my dog, my service dog, to my interviews with me, of course. I got a job at that call center. I worked full-time there. They knew I had the service dog. They asked for no documentation for about a month. And then suddenly somebody complained and I had to have documentation. I couldn't get back in to see my psychiatrist to get documentation for a good month. So I went a month without her. That was very, very hard. And I was not prepared in a way that I should have been to already have that kind of information, in that the field I was in before, you could have animals. It was an afterthought. It was something I didn't research that I should have. I researched it to an extent, but not to the extent that I should have done. I had to go through a lot of what I call heartache to, you know, learn my lesson from that, to be prepared going into a job that they have the right to have that proof in that situation. It's a little different than public access, where you don't need any kind of proof to have your service dog. You can just go into the store and you're fine, as long as that dog is potty trained and is behaving properly. But they can ask for a doctor to say that he is signing off on a service dog, basically, for a job. And it was really hard. I worked at that call center for, I think, 7 months. Full-time while still working that weekend job at that clinic, because I was grasping and holding on hard to what I spent so many years in school for. I wanted so bad to stay in that field, and I knew it was too much stress for me, but I pushed to stay in it anyway. And I was offered full-time there after somebody left at that clinic. So I took it, and I left the call center. Well, of course, I was right back in the same situation with too much stress. I was a kennel manager, and it was a small clinic, but small clinics have their issues as well, as far as you have those that have worked there since the place opened, and they expect things a certain way, and they want things a certain way, and there's that anxiety of living up to that, and that added with being the manager of the kennel area, it ended up being too much for me, and I had to leave. I did try to do just a kennel boarding job part-time, but that place actually did let me go because I was not fast enough. I couldn't stay focused well enough for them. So staying in the animal business, you know, staying in that career field in some way, shape, or fashion, other than just being a trainer, which I do still train, but that doesn't, you know, bring home the bacon, as I say. Other than that, I've pretty much had to leave the animal field altogether, which for me has been really hard. It's not something I wanted to do. I've wanted to be actually a veterinarian since I was very, very young, since I could talk. I mean, since as far back as I can remember, at least 8 years old, I've wanted to be a veterinarian. And being a vet tech was already me taking a huge hit because I couldn't afford to continue school to be a veterinarian. So this has been really hard for me. I went without a job for 3 months. I'm just now back in the job field again, working at Sears. I worked there for 2 years while I was going to school to be a vet tech. So I was able to get my job back there. And they're really accepting of the dog, the service dog. I have my documentation up front, so that was very helpful. It's been a huge struggle, of course, changing from a place where animals are everywhere to a place where I'm going to get those questions about my dog. It's going to be like public access all day long because a service dog being there is a big deal. It's not like it's just another dog or just another animal in the facility. So I get the questions quite often. I'm in fine jewelry, so I'm behind the counter there, which is really nice. My boss has been very accommodating. He came up with the idea himself for my service dog to be behind the counter at the fine jewelry department. He wanted to put me in fine jewelry so that since it's enclosed, she could be off leash. It was completely his idea. He felt it would be the least stressful for us as a team. I could not thank Brian enough, that's my boss, in case he's listening, for being so incredibly accommodating to me and really being there for me and my service dog. That being said, it has been rough. I've had to educate other coworkers, and I've had to learn my own boundaries as far as when it's okay for me to educate and when I need to get a manager to intervene with the situation. I do get questions all day from members, customers that come in to shop about my service dog. At first they won't see her, then she'll come over and stand by me, and oh, I get the awes, and I get the she's cute, and I get the why do you have that dog here. I get a lot of questions. I get why do I need her, what do I have. I get lots of questions. It's a huge struggle and a huge difference from going from animal based to a call center where, yes, I got questions in the beginning, but then everybody knew her. I didn't see customers. I saw a group of 500 people that were the same 500 people every day for 7 months. They knew I had a service dog. I might get a question here or there, but it wasn't a huge difference from the animal world, other than the struggles I had to go through to be allowed to have her there. Being at Sears, it's a completely different story. And it feels very weird to be back in the retail business. I thought I was done with that. And I've taken a huge hit in pay, so that's been pretty big too. But overall, I think I'm happier than I've been in a really long time back at Sears with my service dog. I feel more confident than I have in a job for as long as I can remember. And it's just been really great overall. It's been a struggle and it's been hard, I'm not going to lie. But overall, at the end of the day, I couldn't ask for a better second chance to try to make a new life that still works so I can still function and be able to have my service dog at the same time.
Okie dokie. That is real super. You touched on a lot of things there. I want to hone in on one thing that might be able to help some people out. Over all the stress, all the incidences of negative things mm-hmm. in this transformation, in this process of going to where it looked like you had to give up your dream, if you will, your career, and, rebuild yourself, rebuild your identity, rebuild, where you were going and, what you were going to do with, your disability says, okay, you can't do this, but your ability says, I can do this. So
yes.
Having seen, okay, I can't really do this. This is just not good and healthy for me. What can I do? Okay, I can do this. And now when you're at the end of that, and I say the end, not like your life ends today, but
I know.
You made a transition and you're back to a place where you're happy with yourself. You're happy with, you know, your job and what you're doing. And, you know, you have a reason to get up out of bed in the morning and to get up and get out, and you feel like you can make a contribution to your home, to your family, and to your community.
Yes.
Would you?
Very much.
What would you tell somebody who, again, maybe they're stuck. They're like, wow, man, and all they're seeing is the negative, the disability. Mm-hmm. Shine some light for somebody to let them know that, you know, it's hard work, but once you do the hard work and you put it in, you can come out at the other end of this thing feeling better, feeling good, and in your case, feeling better than you felt, ever felt. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. Well, I will say that through all of these trials and all of the things I've had to go through and all the negative, that I wouldn't take back all that schooling. I wouldn't take back any of it for the world. I'm a dog trainer. I was able to have service dog easier because of that. I know so much that I'm able to educate others on their animals for free and feel like I'm making a contribution to the world just to help someone with nutrition, which is one of my specialties, you know, or help them with their horse because I love horses and I'm also a horse trainer. To do those things, I can still do those things. I just can't work and do those things. But I can still help people. I can still use that knowledge to make the world a better place, in my opinion. Using that knowledge, I didn't waste that money. I didn't waste that time. My disability didn't win because I didn't get to go off and be vet tech of the year or be a full-fledged veterinarian, and my disability didn't win. I still have that knowledge up there in my head. I can still use that knowledge. And at the end of the day, I may be a jewelry associate, but I get to talk about my service dog. I get to tell people about us as a team. People generally will ask me other animal questions, and I get to answer those too, whether that be my fellow coworker, my boss, you know, a customer that came to visit the store. I get to have those relationships and really feel good about myself at the end of the day and make a positive contribution to my community. And I get to bring home, whether it be a small paycheck, I still get to bring home a paycheck and help in some way, whether that just be buy the groceries and pay my phone bill. I get to help in some way. Again, my disability didn't win. And my service dog has been a huge part of what has been able to make this possible for me.
That sounds like it ought to be on a brochure somewhere.
You
and
think?
That's super. And, you know, it's great to me when somebody can turn a mishap into something positive. You know, find the silver lining within the cloud. Not, you know, denying there is a cloud, but saying, okay, in spite of the cloud, let's see how we can move forward. And let's see how we can still meet our needs. And it does seem like you have a pretty good sized need of contributing to the community. And, you know, there were some things that were stopping you from doing that. And, you know, you were led to the idea that a service dog can help you mitigate some of those things and found out that that was true. Now, one of those things I believe that helped you continue to make a difference and make an impact was the fact that you started at least one Facebook group. Do you want to speak a little bit on your Facebook group and maybe invite some folks in, maybe not invite some folks in because maybe they don't fit? But do you want to speak a little bit about your Facebook group?
Yes, sure. I actually do have two Facebook groups. I have the Service Dog Handlers Safe Haven, and I have Service Dog Team Elite Underdogs. The first one was started, Safe Haven was started, as a safe place for those handlers who just don't seem to fit into some of the other more cutthroat groups that are just a little more ethical. Not that ethical is, that's not the right word. They're a little more over the top. Ethics are always a good idea, but they're a little over the top. They're not very flexible. Some of the other groups are not very flexible. And I wanted a place where, while still following an ethical handler code of ethics, and, you know, still having rules in place, we could still have fun and learn at the same time. And when somebody doesn't understand something, we can nicely explain the correct way without sounding harsh or kicking them out or shunning them from the community or blacklisting them as a fake without knowing their story. I wanted that opportunity for those handlers who are new and just honestly don't know everything there is to know. I mean, I don't know everything there is to know. So I'm still new myself. So, I mean, I wanted a place that people could go and learn and not feel like, well, obviously I don't deserve a service dog because I don't know everything there is to know. And have had good and bad pros and cons to have group. It can be extremely stressful. It can be too much for someone with the type of disabilities I have. I do have quite a few admins because of that. Sometimes I have to step back. The Safe Haven has gotten pretty big. I made the Underdogs group to kind of be a little smaller, a little more selective of who's in it. And it's a little different. It's meant to be kind of a place to have fundraisers and post your radio show and to sell things. And you can still also talk about stuff, rant and rave and, you know, whatever else you need to do. I'm very relaxed in that group. I monitor it, but I allow pretty much anything to go in that group. I have a very small set of rules in that group that I expect to be followed. And other than that, I mainly just want people to respect each other and no bashing or negativity. And if they've got an issue with another handler, to take that up with them privately and not in the group itself. So I started that group in a way to kind of branch out and not feel so stressed by the heaviness and the stressness of my other group, which I very much want to stay that way. I want it to stay a strict, upheld group where we mainly are there to learn and, you know, post our experiences, but learn. And the other group is more for fun. I still want handlers to be legit and to be, respectful, but a little more relaxed. I really enjoy having the groups overall, other than having my days whenever I have to tell the admins that I have to take over because I just can't handle it. I really love educating others about service dogs, and I really, really love sharing my experiences and, you know, videos of, you know, my service dog and I have what I call a backup service dog in training, but she's nowhere near ready, that I also work with off and on, who is also kind of part-time for my son as he has possibly Asperger's, which I think they consider high-functioning autism now. And his doctor is kind of trying to hold off on actually giving him a diagnosis. She wants him to overcome it. She's a little unorthodox of a doctor, but he's young, and she would love for him to be able to just overcome that, and if he can. That's a different, a different story for a different day. But I do have a second service dog in training that runs around my house, so I have videos of her too. And it's just really nice to share that stuff. I also have an Instagram page of my own called Leonard Service Dogs. I share all kinds of stuff on there, my cats, my dogs, my horse, all kinds of stuff, my experiences. I have three different pages as a professional that I still try to maintain, even though I am not actually in the field of animals anymore. I have Leonard's Pet Stop, and then I have two sister pages off that, Modern Animal Nutrition Done Right, which was actually the first page made, ironically, and Leonard's Animal Training and Behavior. They're specialties that I have. As a veterinary technician, you can take certificates and specialties and have the extra title of VTS, Vet Tech Specialty, and I have a few of those. So I have some pages, and I have my groups, and behind a computer, I'm a completely different person than I am in public, meaning that I'm a little more shy till I get to know you in public. So I kind of like being able to be behind the computer and get to know people and make friends, and that kind of gives me a path, a bridge to where now I know you, so now it's not as scary. And having my service dog, there you go again, I've been able to have an outlet for that because that's the subject. So I think that it's been really nice overall to have the groups. And then I kind of added in there that I have pages. They're not super active. I mean, they're pages, not groups. But I get to educate people sometimes about animal stuff still, so it's kind of nice.
Uh-huh. Well. As we look upon the clock on the wall, I see that we have actually exceeded the time that I should have asked if there's anybody with any questions or any comments that they might have. We'll give you a short period of time to call in at 646-668-2499. And once you're in, press the number 1 on your phone keypad, and then I will know that you have a question or comment to make. Don't have a whole lot of time, and so you're going to have to do that really quickly so that I would know that you're there with a question to ask, and we'll get that question on. And in the meantime, Nikki, I want to give you an opportunity. I had one other question for you, but we're just out of time for that. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to give a summation and say anything that you might want to make sure gets out to the audience that I may not have directed you in the direction to say, but you were dying to say. Maybe it's something on your notes or something that we just didn't get to. Go ahead and take some time and share from that place right there.
Okay. We covered, everything and then some, which was great as far as notes go. I will say that those who are new and still thinking about service dogs, just remember you definitely want to be legitimate. I'm not saying anyone isn't who would be listening, but if you are someone listening who has a friend who is not necessarily being very honest, it's really important because it can hurt the community as a whole. As far as you need to truly need a service dog, whether that be because you have a mental or a physical disability, or you need a medical alert, And it's good to have your doctor on board. It's very good to have your doctor on board, of course. And, of course, a service dog is any dog that is trained to mitigate your disability, task trained to mitigate your disability in tasks that are directly related to your individual disability, not, you know, someone else's disability. And, of course, any kind of aggression training is not accepted by the ADA and is prohibited. Not, you know, you can't have a dog that is aggressive or going to bite someone as a service dog. Protection, a dog solely for protection, that's not considered a service dog. And other animals, other than the occasional miniature pony in special circumstances, other animals are not considered service animals. There are emotional support animals, but those do not have the same rights as service dogs. They are not able to go into public, non-pet-friendly places. Are allowed, however, with doctor approval and documentation, and non-pet-friendly housing without pet deposits. I actually have an emotional support animal. He's a cat. His name's Bubbles. I am a cat lover, and I've had Bubbles for a couple years now. Been for a while. He's a bobtail cat. He's really awesome. I love him very much. He, for the longest time, I've said he helps me better than my dog. As we've gotten further into our bond together, in the beginning of that, I said, I wish the cats were service animals, because Bubbles, he can do things you wouldn't believe a cat could do. He walks on a leash. He can go fetch my medication, wake me up from nightmares. He's a really great cat. But, of course, he's an emotional support animal. He did not have access or rights to go into public places that are not pet-friendly. He does go to PetSmart on occasion. But mainly that's just the education of that, and always do your research and be prepared going into the community, potential handler. It can be a hard road, but it's very rewarding.
Okay, great. I need to let you know so you're not surprised when you listen back to this. In the last couple of minutes, your phone has started to die. So a lot of what you said didn't come through, but okay. We will note that you did go off on a tangent about your cat. We're not talking about service cats. We're talking about service dogs. And we're just going to leave it at that.
Yes. But cats, you, are not service animals.
Yeah, you said that. You mentioned the thing about rights. I wanted to throw this out there just for qualification. The dog does not have rights. The human has rights. The human has Correct. Rights to a dog. The human does not have rights to other animals. But I just wanted to throw that out there because I hear way too many times, the dog has rights. The dog has rights. No. The law does not give the dog rights. The
Correct.
Law gives the human rights. So I just wanted to
Correct.
Say that. And since you brought it up, I'm going to let you do this, and then we're going to bring the show. Oh, you brought it up, and there was a question about it. So I'm going to stick it in there, and then we'll go ahead and bring the show to an end. I'm not sure if your battery is dying or your phone, or I'm not sure what's going on with that.
I live in a town with terrible reception. I'm surprised that we've had such good luck so far.
Okay, well, you sound really good now. So let's get this question in, and then we could go ahead and do this. You are a professional trainer that's not really working professionally in training, but you still are a professional trainer that has owner trained. Now, can you take out your invisible scale and talk about the advantages and disadvantages of owner training versus program trained or trainer assisted training as far as a service dog is concerned.
Yeah, of course. Of course, with an owner-trained service dog, you're doing the brunt of the work. You're doing all that work. You've got to put in the time and the effort, as well as, although maybe less money, you still have to put money in, too. You're going to have to be the one that is consistent and teaching that dog a task, from obedience all the way to an actual task, such as deep pressure therapy or covering and blocking or interrupting a compulsive behavior. You're going to have to do that. You're going to have to, you know, do the research, whether it be buy the books or do the trainer assisted. You're going to have to put in that time and that effort. Some people are unable to do that, whether it be that they are in too much pain or they are unable to, you know, physically handle it or emotionally handle it. It can be a lot of work, or it is a lot of work. It can be very rewarding as well, of course. You have a stronger bond if you're training your own dog than you do getting a dog and then building a bond. You're building a bond the whole time that you're training that dog. So that is a huge pro. And generally, it is your cheapest route. Not always, but generally, it is your cheapest route to go to owner training. In my opinion, it's one of the harder ways to go, though. Trainer assisted is probably my favorite. I put owner training on one end and program on another, and I actually think trainer assisted is probably, in my opinion, the best. But everybody's an individual, and we all, you know, we all do things differently and can handle things differently. With trainer-assisted training, you're going to have a trainer that you work with, whether that be, you know, in person, by email, by phone, in a group session with other dogs. You're going to be working with another trainer. You're going to take what they said and apply it to your dog, or you're going to be there watching them and then repeating what they're doing. I really like this because you're still getting that bond, but you're getting the help. You're not doing it completely by yourself. You're getting the professional aspect of it and the second opinion, even if you are a professional. You're getting the second opinion of, in most cases, a more seasoned trainer, as where I am a new trainer. I do have local trainers that are more, they've been doing it for a long time. They know a lot more about it, about training, than I do, just from experience. I very much like the trainer-assisted avenue because you have that extra leg to stand on. As far as programs are concerned, I do like programs. It has nothing to do with me not liking them. I think that they can be outrageous, expensive, and there's generally a huge waiting list. But there are a few out there that are less expensive and are very, very good. I like Little Angel Service Dogs. I actually have some books from them. They're a pretty good program. There's also a program in my area called Disabled Veteran. And although they are called Disabled Veteran, I have seen them help others besides veterans. They use breeding stock dogs. Little Angels generally use a shelter dog. So you've got two different aspects there as well. And I love both programs. I think they're both really nice programs. I am not anti-program. I do love programs. And I love the idea that you don't have to put any, or not no work, but you put in little work by comparison. You've got a dog that has all this training, and then it comes, you know, you come to that dog or it comes to you, and you're taught how to work with that dog to make it do what you need it to do. So you do very little training and work in comparison to owner training or even assisted, trainer-assisted training. There's just that huge difference there. in the amount of work you put in. But you've got the price tag on that as well. You may have, if you have a good program, a more sound dog. But, again, you may not. And it's also very much based on the individual, in my opinion. So I'm not anti any of them or just absolutely pro any of them. For me, owner training worked really well with some trainer assisted off and on. And I do really like trainer assisted. But for each person, something works differently.
Very well, very well. I am going to go ahead and do this then at this time. We don't have anybody who has called in and said, hey, I have a question. So we don't have any questions that we need to throw out there and put before you. And we don't have anybody who said, hey, I got a comment. Maybe they're saving their comments to type them beneath the show after the show. Or maybe you'll get them in the podcast. So at this point in time, I will go ahead and say, thanks, Nikki, for coming on and for braving your anxieties and neuroses and just coming on and sharing with us about your experience, because as you know, I believe that everybody's story is important and everybody's story can help somebody, because we all have a story and pretty much we're all looking for somebody who can let us know that we're not alone. We're not the Lone Ranger. We're not the only one going through it. And we're not the only one who's had this situation, this setback. So as lonely as we might feel sometimes, there's other people out there. And if we reach out to one another, we can find somebody who maybe has gone through what we're going through and let us know that by experience, it's not as bad as it seems. So I thank you for sharing. I know that it took some doing for you to do so.
Yes, you're very welcome.
And I want to thank everybody that's tuned in and everybody who has shared our show with others so that they can tune in, so that our community can grow, our community can learn from each other as well as learn from the professionals. And I just want to thank you for tuning in. Keep sending your referrals of people that you want to hear from, people that you think would be good guests, organizations that might benefit from the exposure, and other people might benefit from knowing these organizations are out there. And so we thank you. We love you. We want the best for you. Love your dog and love the people that are with you, walking alongside of you through your situation and circumstances. Until tomorrow, we say goodbye and God bless.